If you're in the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace where each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. If you're in the market, use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Wow.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is 12:08. You are listening to News Talk 830 WCCO Radio, your good neighbor station. It's Shaletta Brundage. I am the host of the show, and February is my favorite month. It is. It's absolutely my favorite month. It is Black History Month, and so Black history is American history. And so February is a time where the entire country, all the schools, the universities, folks at the job, corporations, everybody is doing something to recognize Black history. And I'm going to just tell you, during Black History Month, I work. My calendar is triple packed. Folks are calling me. I am the Black lady for a lot of organizations where I come in and I chat. I'm on panels. I'm moderating. I'm hosting. I am emceeing. Baby, February is cold in Minnesota, but it is red hot on my calendar. But I have to tell you, this year for Black History Month, there's something else going on. Schools and universities are marking the start of Black History Month across the country, but they are wrestling with increasing limits on what they can teach about racism and history. Get this. There are new laws in at least 14 states and various restrictions elsewhere that there is a threat and leading teachers to simply mention important figures in Black history without getting into them, because some state legislatures and some governors, including Republican Governor Ron DeSantis in Florida, they have been a most aggressive in states limiting what educators can teach about Black history. And so I had to bring in Lambrus Fisher, LambrusFisher.com, host of the Diversity Dude podcast, TED Talk speaker, national speaker, and award-winning author. Diversity in Clinical Practice is his book. He is a licensed in marriage and family therapist, but he is also a diversity and inclusion expert, and he is joining me now. Lambrus, thank you so much for being on the show this morning. Happy Black History Month to you.
Happy Black History Month to you too, Shaletta. Glad to be here.
Now, I'm ready to celebrate Black History Month, but we have to take a moment to talk about what is going on. In 30 states, they have proposed new restrictions. We've got the Florida State Board of Education has a rule change that happened in 2021 prohibiting teachers from what they're called, quote unquote, distorting historical facts. Texas has a similar plan. And these policies are why many teachers now approach Black History Month very carefully, Lambrus.
Indeed. And the thing that makes it challenging is that there's so many different arguments and so many different battles being fought at the same time. And it's hard to figure out how they can find a way to educate, do what they're called to do what they're tasked to do every day while still navigating those political and socio-political challenges. And a lot of times they're not even having the same conversation. In part, when they have certain laws that says, we don't want you to distort the facts, distort history, then you get into a debate to say, whose history, which part of history, and the implications of such. But at the end of the day, many of the teachers aren't really trying to fight that battle. They're just trying to fight the battle of doing what they do for every other day, teach history. These events happened. These people did significant things, and they even feel restricted to just do that. They can't even mention people's names or mention particular events because of the implications. And at its core, there are strategies for how they can go about doing that in a way that avoids those landmines. A lot of times those landmines are focused on, well, we don't want the kids to be uncomfortable. That's one a little bit difficult because some people say, well, if my kids have to be uncomfortable with the realities of that history today, then your kid should have to be uncomfortable listening to it. But we're not trying to make anybody uncomfortable. We're not. That's not the goal. The goal isn't, yes, here, come to school, be uncomfortable, deal with it. The goal is to acknowledge what happened so that we can make a present and a future that doesn't have to repeat those injustices and those discomforts over and over again. And if we focus on that, then we can teach history, acknowledge that the history is beyond just the bad things that happened, about the accomplishments and the creations and the rich cultural heritage that's here. We can do more than just make people uncomfortable. We can do more than just hit with the hard truths. We can celebrate Black history, celebrate the uniqueness of the culture, and go beyond that in ways that are safe, not only safe for everyone, but actually informative for everyone as well.
Okay, Lambers, I just got a DM from a teacher who wants to know, how do I teach the end of slavery, the 13th Amendment, and then not answer or acknowledge the atrocities of slavery? She says no one wants to be fired. Now, we're talking to Lambers Fisher. He goes into schools. He works with districts. He works with teachers. He works with department heads in education and talk to them about curriculum and diversity and equity and inclusion. And so having him on for Black history, especially when this country is so divided, to talk about how we educate kids about the accomplishments and the contributions of African Americans in the classroom is so important. And he is the foremost expert on this topic. So how do you answer this teacher, Lambers?
Well, to the teacher specifically, since they're on the front lines on this education front, I'll acknowledge that there's an ideological challenge and then there's a practical day-to-day challenge. The ideological challenge focuses on what should be taught, what you should need to know, what you should be able to accept, and what you should have to realize on a day-to-day basis, and it goes down that road, and it's not even a jab or a judgment against shoulds. Those have merit. However, because those have risks right now, then there's a delicate way of moving around that in the sense of acknowledging the difficult things that the difficult realities that we have to deal with today, acknowledging that, yes, the end of slavery made a big difference, and yet there are lingering effects that have continued to occur long after that. But the focus, as you look out onto your classes, not to say, and thus every one of you who look like those people, you should feel bad now. You should feel personally responsible, because that's what everybody's worried about. And to be able to acknowledge, yes, those things happened, and a lot ended then, and a lot of things still have impact today that might be impacting things you know. The goal is for us to look for those things and try to make today better than it was then. If you focus on that balance and make it clear, I am not trying to judge anyone in this room. I'm not trying to judge anybody you love or care about. As much as acknowledge what happened then, and for many, if not you, that's fine. For many, they're still feeling like it's not fully over yet. If you can acknowledge that without having to go on the attack, then you can delicately balance around that and by still acknowledging the history as well as acknowledging the emotional reactivity of it as well.
Okay, we got to take a quick break. But when we come back, Lambers, I'm going to, because we have a lot of educators, a lot of principals, a lot of teachers, I'm getting texts and DMs from them. They didn't know that it was possible to bring somebody into the school to help them deal with this, to help educate them, to help bring the teachers together. Because as the countries are divided, the ideologies of the teachers are divided as well. And so these principals and these administrators are looking for somebody like you to come into the school and bridge these gaps, especially now during Black History Month. So when we come back, I want to talk to you about what services you provide to the schools, because people are blowing me up. They want more of what you're talking about, especially now during Black History Month. So When we come back, we'll have more with Lambers Fishers next. It is 12:20, and in addition to celebrating Black History Month, I'm celebrating my birthday, 52 years around the sun today. Bless God. I tell you, I laid in my bed last night and I just smiled at midnight and thanked the Lord. Nothing aching, nothing breaking. I could breathe out of both nostrils, hear out of both ears, see out of both eyes. I don't have any upcoming doctor's appointments or surgery scheduled where there is care or concern. I tell you that my kidneys and my liver work. I feel blessed today. I feel blessed today. Thank the Lord for 52 years around the sun. Kathy Werzer sent me flowers this morning. My best friend and the godfather to my children, Christopher Williams, sent a bouquet. My best friend Fan Sean sent me some of those edible chocolate covered strawberries. I have been having a good time celebrating this birthday. I tell you, 52 might just be it for me. Sometimes people say I would give anything to be 20 again. Not me. I don't want to be. I was dumb at 20. I would rather be 52 than 25 any day. But while I'm celebrating my birthday, teachers across the country are trying to celebrate and commemorate and educate their students about Black history, and they're running into issues. They are afraid. The word critical race theory has been introduced to our vocabulary. And, you know, when you find out what it means, you realize the argument is really baseless. But still, it is causing a stir. And so I've invited Lambers Fisher in. He is the host of the Diversity Dude podcast, best-selling award-winning author of Diversity in Clinical Practice, a TED Talk speaker, a marriage and family therapist, licensed counselor, and a diversity and inclusion expert. And so, Lambers, as schools and universities are trying to figure out how to teach Black history, especially in places like Florida and Texas, where they have rules on the books and kids are being, you know, extra careful and talking to their parents about what happened in school. And, you know, one teacher told me one time, if you believe half of what they tell you, we'll believe half of what they tell us. So, you know, as the kids come home in first and second grade about these lessons, the teachers are cringing because they don't want to put themselves in a situation where, like this one teacher sent me a note and said, we don't want to get fired.
Yes. Yes. The challenge is very hard. The challenge is completely unfair to be put in a situation where the rules are very undefined, but the threats are very real. And it's not something that's ideal. And yet the challenge is necessary. The more we know, the more we can make better decisions for now and for the future to be less likely to repeat those atrocities. And what we don't know, the more likely it can be to be led into those situations. And at its core, to try to make clear, the goal is to identify what the lines are, what the rules are, which are different across different states, across different systems, and they're inconvenient and may not be clearly defined, but figure out what those are. And then recognize that we no longer, for right now, have the luxury of just teaching what we believe to be the facts. We don't have that luxury because we also have the implications of the emotional impact of those as well. The hard facts, the true facts, will make people feel judged, whether you do it with a judging tone of voice, whether you call people out, or even just allow judging to happen in the room. As teachers, we already know that we have the challenge of not only communicating facts, but also to manage the room, to manage the disruptiveness of the room for a variety of different reasons. Well, now we have to acknowledge the emotional impact, whether it be peer-to-peer or just within oneself. And when we acknowledge facts, and then internally we say, wait, those people look like me. Those people come from where I come from. Am I like that too? Am I like that? And if one peer is looking to another peer and they're looking and say, you did that to me because your ancestors did that to my ancestors, then we don't have the luxury of letting them figure that out on their own. We have to shape it. We have to make sure we're being clear. These are the facts. Now, we all have an opportunity to individually take responsibility for our behaviors today. And if we're making clear that, we can do that amongst the peers, amongst the students. We can also do that amongst the teachers, because teachers are looking at each other and says, what are you teaching in that course? Are you teaching things that are favoring people who look like me, or are you teaching something different? And it's uncomfortable there as well. But if we're clear at what we're trying to do and how we're trying to do it, not only the facts, but acknowledging I'm not trying to make anybody feel judged today for what happened before, but we also have an opportunity to be accountable, not responsible, but accountable for what we do today. to reduce the likelihood of those things happening again in the future.
Okay, Lambers, you go into a school. You get a call from a principal or an assistant principal or someone from the district, and they say, we want you to come in on our teacher in-service day or our teacher education day or our staff training day and talk to us about how we can teach Black history. What does that look like?
Practically speaking, sometimes it looks like anywhere from a 2 to 3 hour workshop intensive training where I make it interactive. I bring some content and I take all the jargon, all the political, all the politically correct, the right and wrong, and just make it practical and break it down and says, hey, this is how you can expand your perspective and this is how you can expand the student's perspective. And sometimes it just comes down to a quick 1 hour lunch learn. I can cram a lot into a smaller bit of time because I balance it out between content. Here are some things that will save you some work. Here are some things that will save you from getting into trouble before you even get started. And then I always open it up to open, interactive Q&A, and I make it such a, what we always hear in school, there's no bad question. It's like, well, a lot of times people don't get the luxury of having that in a diversity, multicultural type of training because they feel like, well, if I ask this, not only will the presenter be mad at me, but my colleagues will think less of me. And I try to create a environment where every question is safe because if you're asking it, I assume there's a genuine desire to learn more for yourself, for your colleagues, and for your students. And once I create that environment, then everybody opens up. And they not only end with more information, but they end with me gone. But them in an environment where they can continue to have conversations because now we've broken that ice and made it safe for colleagues to say, hey, how are you handling this in your class? Because now we all know that we're on the same page and wanting to do so. And after that, it gets real interesting because then they can continue to grow. The student can see a difference, a welcoming of different questions that they didn't even know it was safe. Not because they have all the answers, but because it's safe to ask the questions and explore individually how that impacts them, and everything changes.
Okay, you got to tell me now because folks are, and I really appreciate our listeners. You know, I'm interactive in real time on social media, so I'm posting on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and LinkedIn as we chat, and people are responding in my DMs, and folks want to know how they can get in touch with you. How can you get into their schools for their lunch and learns, for their teacher education and training? And I've got a couple of administrators who want to reach out to you too. So if you can just go ahead and tell them that, then I don't have to respond to these 15 text messages I just got because I'm trying to do my show, Lambers. You done made yourself so interesting that now everybody wants you to come to the school.
Well, that is a great, great challenge to have, Sheila. I'm glad to be able to help out with that. Well, I'm easily found. One, you can find me at my website, lambersfisher.com. But for those who don't quite know what a Lambers is because they never heard of that before, you can also find me at diversitymadesimple.com because that's the goal, to make it not as convoluted, not so academic, not with psychological jargon or with historical shame and guilt. I wanted to make it shame-free, positive, encouraging, not because all of history is, but because the goal is to make it shame-free and positive. And so I want to make diversity simple for everyone. So if you reach out to me, diversitymadesimple.com, I have instructions on there for how to reach out to me. And obviously, I'm a therapist first and foremost, but I reserve times regularly. Once a week, I'm somewhere helping, whether it be corporation or nonprofit, school, or even restaurant groups wanting to help me, help them make their serving staff more welcoming to every customer that comes in. Everyone can benefit in some way, personalizing it, especially the educators in this month with this particular challenge to help demystify things, make it safe for the educators, safe for the students, and everybody wins.
Okay, someone just sent me an email and wants to know more about your book. They said, you mentioned a book. He has written a book. Give us the name of the book again, and where can we find it? So can you give us that information about your book? Because I know you won some type of award. I remember seeing it on LinkedIn, some kind of National George somebody award. Who? George Foreman. What was it, Lamb? It was a George Washington Award, right?
Love it. Pretty close. It was the Benjamin Franklin Award.
I knew it was a president.
Independent. Yeah, exactly. Well, close. Independent Book Publishers Association. Because the uniqueness of it is the book is called Diversity in Clinical Practice. And it's called that because it's designed initially for my fellow therapists, because a lot of people are now being willing to seek out therapists for the first time. They weren't willing to. And yet only 5% of therapists are African-American and they want somebody to look like them. And we only have so many hours to go along. So I figured, how can I help my fellow colleagues learn how to increase their cultural competence in ways that pleasantly surprise them and pleasantly surprise the people who are coming to them for help? And yet, I wanted to make it so simple, diversity made simple, that I took out all the psychological jargon. I took out all the academics such that anybody can read it. You don't have to be a therapist to read this book. It says diversity in clinical practice. But I've gotten this book for teachers, and I have principals say, let me buy 20 of those for all my teachers, and let me have pastors say, let me buy those for my pastoral team. Is that practical? They give you practical tips for how to look at diversity beyond Black history. This is not just even about race and ethnicity. It's about gender and sexual orientation and faith beliefs, political beliefs, various different socioeconomic, any ways in which we can be different. That's the goal, because we can be diverse in many ways. And so that is how practical it is. It's available at Amazon.com. It's available in paper and audiobook, whatever your learning style is. It's available for you. Take a look at it. As one, it can be a core piece to any effort to meet the greatest variety of needs possible.
Well, Lambers, I thank you so much for spending part of your Saturday with us here at the show. Thank you so much for making yourself available to our community to make this difficult topic something that we can work together to overcome. Happy Black History Month.
You too, Shalala. Thanks for inviting me.
All right. And you all stick around. I've got me some celebrity guests in the studio. Find out who it is.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing digital deals for members. Coca-Cola, 7-Up, Dr. Pepper, and Polar Seltzer, selected varieties and sizes, buy two and get three free of equal or lesser value, plus CRV. Limit three free items. USDA Choice Bone-In Ribeye Steak, $7.97 per pound. Limit two packages. Creamy Hass Avocados, 77 cents each. Limit four items. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Is next. I was going through my phone and reading text messages when I saw one come across from my friend, Washington County Commissioner Carla Bingham. And she said, have you read the Star Tribune story? Have you seen the news? And I had not. I had been driving. I jumped out to go to lunch with my friends from the St. Paul Saints. Downtown St. Paul, we were laughing and talking. And when I got in my car, I went to look and make sure that I hadn't missed anything and saw that note. And I said, what is going on? And she said, it's Carrie. She's stepping down. The cancer is back. And so, I clicked on the Star Tribune story and saw the headline, Senate Majority Leader Carrie Dietzick will step down from leadership after cancer returns. Then I went to the WCCO radio website and It was news of the day yesterday, and it was news to me, and it rocked me. It rocked my faith because I know what I pray for. I pray for God to heal my friend, and for 100% healing and a miracle. And so to see the headline and read the story, it hurt my feelings, and it bruised my faith. Because I'm just used to God answering my prayers. I'm spoiled. I'm sorry. It touched me in a way that was a little bit different. And so I had to just regroup and pray harder and dig deep into my faith and believe for a healing and a miracle. More than thoughts and prayers, faith and miracles. So I'm going to take it up a notch because maybe I was at thoughts and prayers. So I'm believing for State Senator, Senate Majority Leader Kerry Dietzick for miracles. And so I'm so glad that Julie Blaha is here, Minnesota State Auditor. She is in the studio with me. And I know that you got the news as well. And I'm going to give you a moment to react to that.
Oh, it is always just frightening to hear news like that. You know, we all, I think anybody who's ever dealt with cancer in any way, the word, you know, when you have something return, that's always your fear. But it's something to remember about Senator Dietzick, though, is while she was going through cancer treatment last year, she led one of the most amazing legislative sessions ever. They did more than they have done in decades, and she did it with humility and style and grace. And if she can do that while going for treatment, if anybody can beat this, I mean, Senator Dietzick's the one who can. So, I'm glad she's taking time for herself so she can focus on her health. But I'll tell you, really, if anybody can do this, it's Senator Dietzick.
And baby, the way she kept everybody together, the way the legislation kept passing one thing after the next thing after the next thing to support families and the community and children. And I mean, and how folks came together, Republican and Democrat and independent, and people began to look at Minnesota from other parts of the country. And she is now one of the most respected politicians, not just in Minnesota, but throughout the country.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And she is, it's how she shares power, how she, treats people with such dignity. There's just this incredible balance, just the perfect leader. And so, that's a loss, you know, that she's going to be stepping down. But I'll tell you what, again, I'm praying for her too. And I never count her out. It's amazing what she can do.
I'm gonna tell you, because when y'all were standing on those steps at the Capitol signing that historic legislation, and she was standing back there, and you knew that she was going through her own battles and her own challenges, but she stood so tall and so proud and so firm as a leader in the Minnesota State Senate, that whether you are Republican or Democrat, whether you believe in what she's fighting for or not, the respect of her commitment to the people. Because I'm going to tell you something, girl. I have a toenail that it might hang. I have a pimple that needs to be popped. I have a hair out of place. I'm not coming to work, okay? You let the car look like it might be on flat. If I need a little bit of extra gas, it's a wrap. I'm calling in. I'm an easy quitter. I really will give up, especially on a job. But, you know, in the midst of everything she was going through, girl, she stayed focused and committed and was one of the hardest working people on the Hill.
Well, and in 1 year, I mean, just that last year, she's done more than most legislators will do in their whole career. And so, you know, even at this point, she already has this incredible legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we're safer because of her. We're more free because of her. We've got better opportunities because of her. And I'll tell you, I hope she's extremely proud of that.
And you know what? I just need to tell you this. And I need you to relay this to your team and the governor. I don't think that y'all talk enough about what you have done to make it safe for families. What Carrie and everybody has done. The first time I met her, my son had a concern about his younger siblings who could not talk. Philando Castile had just died. He went to the Hill. He chatted with her. Andrew was 10 years old at the time. And the next thing we know, she's got autism officer training funding so the police officers can understand how to talk to people who have autism who may not be responding, you know, things that they can look for. And that was funded. She made sure that it wasn't just some handouts or some pamphlets. They had some money for real training. And so I was talking to somebody the other day and I said, you know, y'all just not bragging enough about the families who are moving to Minnesota because of the legislation that you passed last year. I bumped into a dad from DeRidder, Louisiana, who moved here. I bumped into a mother from New Mexico who moved here. A lady from Arizona DM'd me, and I just went to lunch with a woman who has 5 autistic children who just moved here from Atlanta, Georgia, all because they saw the stories on CNN or read them in USA Today or followed somebody on social media who were talking about the things that the legislators in Minnesota are doing for families. And I know y'all don't like to brag in Minnesota. I know you don't. I know you don't like to toot your own horn. But at some point, y'all have got to start talking about the way that you have made this state a haven for families, especially families in underserved communities, families who have vulnerable children who are on the spectrum or have other special needs. When I go to Texas, Julie, and I start talking about the things that my children have access to, state services, state resources in Minnesota, it's something they have never heard of and did not even know existed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we'll just play that clip because I have to say, you can't say it, you know, and that's the thing. It's not just, you know, we can talk about it, but we need everybody talking about that. Mm-hmm. You know, they hear it from someone like, you know, someone who could run for office and have to go for reelection. They wonder when they hear from somebody and hear from a neighbor. So yeah, tell your story. People need to know what, how this legislation is feeling on the ground. So yeah, talk it up. Everybody's got to talk to each other about that. And if we all have those conversations, then that kind of progress can continue.
Okay. You can't go anywhere. We've got another segment. I want you to stick around because, after the break, we're going to switch it up a little bit. It's my birthday. So we're going to talk about birthday plans. And, I just need to say thank you. I'm so grateful for you because you are helping me put on something, that is near and dear to my heart. You are going to be there to not only participate, but to help small Black business owners in Minnesota find resources and services and gain that political, social, and financial capital they need to go from just surviving to thriving. More with State Auditor Julie Blaha when we come back. Hey, it is 12:48 and we are celebrating my birthday today. I turned 52 years old. Another trip around the sun. Nothing is hurting. Everything's working. I didn't have to be wheeled in here. I don't have a crutch or a brace of any kind. No bags, no tubes, no pending surgeries. I am so blessed and I thank God for another year. And Julie Blaha is with me. And Julie, you said the only thing better than being 52 is what?
Being 53. Hey. I'm 53.
Woo! Now, how do you celebrate your birthday?
My husband puts steaks on the grill,
yeah.
And then all the grandkids come over, come to my house, go to the basement, see what we can break. That's the best way to do a birthday.
You that grandmother. And then when we get the kids back home, we got to retrain them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It's the best.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's not for the parents. And see, that's me. Like Sean was like, what do you want to do? You want to go somewhere? And he's like, getting a babysitter. I'm like, look, you got the best food. You cook better than any chef in the city. Why are we going to go somewhere, pay somebody to eat their food, and then we got to get the kids dressed up? They're going to be itching. They're going to be mad. They got to sit still. It's going to be dark. It's going to get cold. We're going to have to park. We may have to walk. Let's just stay home, cook something, watch Princess and the Frog, make some beignets. Call it a day.
Beignets.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's what I was thinking that's what I'm going to do tonight. I think I just want to go home and spend some time with the babies. with my babies. That's what I'm going to do. But you are going to be spending some time with me in just a couple of weeks.
I'm so excited. I'm particularly, my big brag is that I was there at the beginning. And
you
so I was able to be the first one too. And it was so helpful in my role, trying to serve Minnesota, especially because, you know, my focus is I oversee about $60 billion of local government spending primarily, right? So mm-hmm. cities work, townships, counties, school districts. And so talking to people, especially, entrepreneurs and people who own small businesses, they're deeply connected to local government. Mm-hmm. So this is it's such a gift when you bring a group of experts to where I work and
right.
let me get that. That is just a huge gift to me, to legislators, to anybody who's doing policy work.
And that is Black Entrepreneurs Day at the Capitol. It is going on Friday, February 16th, 11:30 a.m. We have a rally in the Rotunda. And then from 12 until 2, Black entrepreneurs who don't have a lobbyist at the Capitol are going to become their own lobbyist. They have each individual schedules that we've curated based on where their business is or where they live, so that they can talk to those legislators that are making decisions about them and about their community, about their businesses, so they can talk about some of the challenges and issues that they face. And last year, Julie, I was amazed because it was minus 13 degrees.
That's right.
We had never done this before. Nothing had ever been done like this, where Black entrepreneurs came to the Capitol to engage with legislators and then have lunch. 400 people showed up on one of the coldest days of the year. So this thing was needed.
Oh, the energy too was amazing. And it was, you know, I got so much out of it, you know, just to learn how to serve my constituents better. But you could also see the connections that the entrepreneurs were making with each other, and what an incredible, just opportunity again for those connections and you could feel the ideas just sparking.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So many opportunities were made. So many business owners got a chance to work together. Opportunities changed hands. Money was in the room just circulating. Folks were working together and trying to figure out how they could help one another. It was, I tell you what, girl, if something happened to me and I check up out of here, that's the one of the things besides my children that I would absolutely be most proud of is having the idea to put something like this together. But the thing is that I can't do it without y'all. Like, I can come to the Capitol, but if I can't get the legislators to buy in, to sit and listen and talk to these business owners, then we don't have anything except a field trip. And so I have to, again, shout out you and Carla Bingham and Carrie Dietzick and Melissa Hortman and Julie Seeberger and all these amazing people who said we will meet with them. We will sit down and talk to them. Even if they're not from our district, fine. Bring them on in and spent the day with these Black entrepreneurs, listening to their concerns and talking about ways that they can help and understanding some of the unique challenges that they face. So, girl, thank you, because you're coming back. We're putting you in a big old room so that you ain't doing nothing all day, but just like every 20 minutes, just meeting with another group of business owners, engaging with them and talking to them. And I can't thank you enough for making yourself available.
Oh, this is, how could I not? I mean, this, it's actually a huge gift to me because, you know, when you work with local government, such a huge part of it is economic development. And, you know, entrepreneurs really understand how economic development is working at the very ground level. And especially in a time, and this year even more so than last year, where we have a lot of workforce shortages going on right now. If we can't lose one single part of the economy, not one segment of the population can be left behind, or we're all going to hurt. You know, if local businesses are doing well, then your wages are going to be better. And if wages are better, your test scores in schools are going to be better. If you've got the kind of revenue to do services, you can get your roads plowed faster. Everyone benefits when local entrepreneurs are successful. And, especially in an area where we need to keep expanding. Another question I'm going to have for people is, hey, do you have any accountants? I mean, right now there's this a really big shortage of public and private finance people. And so I'm really interested in hearing, how are you handling your finances? How are you dealing with those shortages? And anything that, what's working for you, what can we pool together and maybe share some of this load? Because if it's good for them, it'll be good for us.
Yes. Okay, so Black Entrepreneurs Day at the Minnesota State Capitol. It is Friday, February 16th at 11:30. You can sign up at ShalettaMakesMeLaugh.com. Right at the top of the homepage, there's a button that says sign up. Click on that. We can't do an Eventbrite link because I have to physically engage with each and every person who signs up, because I got to know where you live so I can know which legislator you need to go and talk to, and also where your business is located, because where your business is, you may need to talk to a whole different legislator. So anybody who wants to sign up, I will personally connect with you on the website. And now, before you go, State Auditor Julie Blaha, you done brought this glass in here.
Well, you know, I thought my first part of my birthday present to you could be, I won't sing happy birthday because I sing like a math teacher, like I was. But I was going to share this with you, but you've been so generous to say, no, I get to keep it all. And it's been called a few things, Blaha Blast, Blaha Buzz, the Blaha Editor. It's coffee and Mountain Dew. And, today I went Mountain Dew heavy, bright day, you know, bright day's coming. So I went a little brighter with the Mountain Dew. It's good. I have to say, it was one of the things I think I've done to help unify people.
Girl, you brought us together.
Yeah, I'll tell you.
That is nasty.
Yeah, okay? True. It is.
We're not in agreement that that is a good thing. Everybody's in agreement that that is nasty.
Yeah, I have united people in disgust. But you know what? At times like this, whatever we can do to bring people together, I'm willing to do.
Oh, my God. You went viral with that. It was so hilarious.
I know.
Mountain Dew and coffee. It sounds like a bad prank your kids pulled on
you. But, you know, citrus and coffee, there are so many cultures where they put like orange coffees you get in Mexico. You get a lot of places in the Middle East. You have they'll put again orange flower water or lemon flavors in coffee. So just now, granted, Mountain Dew is
it's not mint from Mexico.
Different. Yeah, it's different. It's a bold choice.
Yes.
Americanizing, maybe not in the best way, but I just saying, don't knock it till you try it. And if you do try it, I'm just going to apologize right now, but I swear, I've gotten some converts. Some people like it.
I know, some people like it. I've seen those people and they walk different now. Julie Blaha, Minnesota State Auditor, thank you for coming on the Shaletta Show. Thank you for being at Black Entrepreneurs Day at the Capitol. And you guys, be back with us right after the news. There's more of the Shaletta Show coming up.